to salute two outstanding human beings tonight as part of our Bath Public Service programming. In St. Albans, England, Mrs. Doris Coulson was so annoyed at the fact that her two sons, age 8 and 5, wanted to watch television, as they say in England, telly. These two kids wanted to watch television all the time, that she threatened to send it back to the store. Can you imagine what that would mean to the average walking around little slob today? We're going to send it back to the store. So, when two men came to the Coulson home Tuesday, nobody's home but they have two kids, and said they wanted the set, the boy said, okay, take it. I was stunned, said Mrs. Coulson, when she reported the theft to the police.
Yeah, somebody grabbed the set. Hooray for them kids. Yeah, they knew where it was. Lucky,
choo-choo. All right, check it out, gang.
Oh, the bear missed the train. Oh, the bear missed the train.
Oh, the bear missed the train, and now he's walking. He's walking, walking far, and now he's walking near. Oh, he's drinking a glass of beer, yeah. Oh, the bear missed the train. Oh, the bear missed the train, and now he's walking.
Another great kid. You know, it's a salute great kids night here tonight. A great kid in West Hurley, New York. And I might add, this kid, well, I'll just read you the piece in case you didn't see it. You should know this is the real news. It's happening. This is from AP, West Hurley, New York. A three-hour chase ended early Wednesday when an exhausted 12-year-old boy pulled the third school bus he had stolen in a night off to the side of the road, state police said. Well, it's one of them rare cases of a 12-year-old really knowing how to drive a school bus, one trooper remarked. They said he didn't miss a gear all night. He kept shifting up and down the hills. He's great driving that bus. The chase began shortly before 1 a.m. after a resident of this hamlet, West Hurley, New York, in upstate New York, reported seeing a school bus pass her home several times late at night. You don't see that often. Right? Trooper said the boy, who was not identified, had taken school buses for rides in the past. This time, they said, he stole a bus from a nearby high school, traded it for another at a bus firm's garage, then drove that one back to the high school where he acquired a third vehicle. It's good, that kid. The police were led on a 45-mile chase through various state and county roads before he just apparently pulled off to the side of the road. Well, apparently he just got tired, a trooper said. When we got to the bus, he was asleep. That ain't dee-dee-dee-dee. He just, you know, he's asleep there over the wheel. Now, I'll tell you this. I'm going to, you know, I read this, see, in my first instinct I had was to say, oh, you know, great, great. But, you know, just this groovy, see. But what happened to me after I put that piece down, it bothered me. See, and I picked it up and read it again. There was something about that piece, you know, that little news note, the kid stealing the school bus, that went deeper than just the kid stealing the school bus. I kept thinking about it, see. Why is this? Why is this bugging me? Why do I feel a sense of vague pleasure? The idea of a kid driving 3 school buses at 1 o'clock in the morning up and down a road. I should deplore that. You know, being official, being grown up, I should say. Oh, that's, you know. Thinking about this, then it hit me. By God, I have always had an ambition to drive a bus. I concede. I have always wanted to sit at the wheel of one of them big things. Just, you know, I don't want to be a bus driver, but just to drive a bus once. A big one. I mean, I'm talking about one, you know, about 75 seats behind it with one of those things that you grab a hold of and you pull and the door opens and you push it, the door closes. With a big wheel, you know, they have big, these great big flat steering wheels. Yeah. And I said, you know, that's the thing that got me about that. This kid did what I've always secretly wanted to do. That kid went out and did it. Now, it's quite obvious he wasn't stealing school buses to sell. Not easy for a 12-year-old kid, you know, to palm off a hot school bus. And on the other hand, he didn't wreck the school buses. He knew what he was doing. That kid was good at it. I mean, he was downshifting and everything. You don't just get in a school bus and tromp on the, you know, this is not like driving a, you know, your average Pinto. You don't just get a tromp on that baby in the head and she goes. No way. Because the trooper says, you know, that guy used the right gears up and down all the time, and we couldn't get him. I mean, he was shifting up and down, and he was going in and out. And, you know, if any of you have driven any heavy vehicles, you know the downshifting scene and all that jerk, that's not something that everybody knows how to do. In fact, a lot of grown-up drivers sitting out there right now listening to me don't know what the word downshift means, even, and I'm sure that many of them have no idea of what the word double clutch means. To double clutch a vehicle. Well, that's what that kid had to be doing. That's right. And obviously, he did not have an automatic transmission in that thing, or else that trooper would not have mentioned the fact that he went through all the gears all the time just right. That meant he was double clutching. And you know what double clutching is, George? Sure you do. Anybody's driven any heavy military vehicles knows what that is. And I have to concede that kid really pulled off a caper. That kid's got he's got a future, that one. Because at the age of 12, I'm not sure I knew what double clutching was. In fact, to be perfectly honest with you, I didn't. I know I didn't. Although I'll tell you this, at the age of 12, I knew damn well how to drive a 4-speed forward and 2-speed in the reverse vehicle. And I'll tell you how it happened with me and how I got involved in this. I got this Saturday job when I was about 10 or 12. 12, I was roughly 12. And I had a Saturday job, and I worked with another guy. And this guy was older. And you know, he's about 16-something years old. And he drove a delivery truck for the grocery store for Aschenschlager's, which was down at the corner. And every Saturday, I would get down there about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I would help him do this thing. And what he would do is that they would make their big delivery. You know, all this, the truck would be loaded up. They had this panel truck. The truck would be loaded up right to the top. I mean, there was celery and these big cardboard boxes full of Scott tissues and all that. You know, grocery orders, see? And he would drive around from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The store closed about 6 on Saturday and make these deliveries, right? Now, my job was to help him carry the box in. Yeah, you know, so that's all I did. You know, I'd sit there on the side there, and he'd say, all right, let's go. And we'd drive off. And he says, what's it? And I had, oh, yeah, another thing I had this, He had this yellow tablet that Oschenschlager had, you know, all the addresses where we was to go, see? And he'd say, all right, the first one going over on Kennedy Avenue, 6922 Kennedy. Come on, let's go. And we'd drive, you know, sit there looking out, and then you'd smell the celery in the truck, you know, and you'd smell all the stuff there. Yeah, you smell all the groceries, see? And then we'd pull up, this guy, oh, he drove, man. I mean, you know, there's a certain kind of panache that a 16-year-old kid has. They're usually bad drivers in a lot of ways, but, man, they drive with, you know, arm hanging out the window, you know, and yelling at the chicks, you know, and shifting. In fact, it had, you know, it was an old battered Chevy, GMC, an old Chevy panel truck, see? And this guy used to show off, you know. He'd shift gears by kicking a gear, you know, with his foot, you know, kicking it in. Watch this, you know. I'll shift the gears without even putting the clutch in. You know, and we're roaring around. Well, one Saturday, after about three or four Saturdays, you know, I'm sitting there next to this guy. One Saturday, he says, you want to drive the truck? You know, you want me to show you how to drive the truck? I said, hey, wow, you know, wow. Because this was very, very illicit. I mean, you know, 12-year-old kid driving a truck. And he says, all right, I'll show you how to drive. Well, I knew how to steer the car, and I knew how to shift, you know, because from the time you're four in Indiana, you learn how to make the H shift, you know, the classical H. And so I knew all these things, see, and I'd messed around with the old man's holes in the backyard. Oh, yeah, you know, all that stuff. The actual first time that I ever honestly drove a car where I was in charge, sitting at the wheel, pressing down on the accelerator and moving along a legitimate street. Let's put it this way. I had driven a car in action, driven a car in anger. Was on that historic Saturday afternoon when this kid, Leonard, let me drive the GMC panel truck, and we made two deliveries. And after that, of course, you know, he's the chief. He took over. All right, I'm taking over. Well, I'm going to tell you, I would have gladly have given my entire salary to have been allowed to drive it another 15 minutes, even 5 minutes. My entire salary, which came to fully 75 cents for the afternoon. You know? And so the next Saturday, you know, I can hardly wait. Saturday, I'm going around here. And I walk in. And there's, you know, there's old Leonard, his smart type, you know. He really had it. He's on top of it, you know. He had a leather jacket, you know, the whole bit, see. And he's got the truck out there, so we drive out. And I'm waiting for him to ask me to drive. No. The whole Saturday, he doesn't say anything. And he goes, you know, can I drive, Leonard? You know. So, you know, about two Saturdays go along like that, see. And on the third or fourth Saturday, we're halfway through the thing. And when Leonard sees this chick, so he's always hollering at girls. You know? There's something about riding. Have you noticed this, George? Before we go any further, friends, this is WOR New York. Have you ever noticed the basic thing that happens to guys when they're in the cab of a truck? It's a fantastic aphrodisiac. There is something about sitting in the cab of a truck that makes you look hungrily at every female for miles around. I don't know why this is. It's the same thing that makes every construction worker holler when he's four stories up hanging on a beam and he sees a girl walk by, you know? I don't know what there is. You don't see, postmen doing that. You know, it's something about working a truck. Well, Leonard, of course, was fully into that bag. Yeah. That's it. He's a big kid, you know. And he keeps hollering, hey, man, pay me well. And he blows the horn, you know, whistling. We're riding around town, driving in and out of the alleys, delivering his stuff. And this Saturday, he picked a chick up. And she's sitting in the truck. Well, we're going along, and I'm sitting on the outside. She's in the middle, you know, and he's driving his thing, you know. He's playing real big. And we go about 10 minutes when Leonard says, hey, kid, you want to drive the truck? I said, yeah, I sure do. So I get out, run around, the chick slides over, he slides over, I get into the driver's seat, and I drove the truck all that afternoon and incidentally made all the deliveries while Leonard used the back of the truck. La-da-ding-ding-ding, la-da-ding-ding-ding. Friends, I do not make the news, I only report it. I'd like to tell you otherwise, but that's the way life is. Hit the button. I might say that ever since that time, when I've ever been around a box of groceries smelling heavily of celery, I find this also an extreme aphrodisiac. Just, you know, it's a connection with Leonard, you know. Leonard just... And then, of course, then we set a pattern. I'm going to have to honestly level with you that I learned to drive in Aschenschlager's panel truck because from that Saturday on... See, and I negotiated okay. See, we went through the whole scene there. I made about 19 deliveries and drove the truck. I was having a fantastic ball, you know, driving a truck. And because... Can you remember the day when just driving a car was an exquisite thrill? An exquisite thrill. Well, some people, you know, lose that. And they, you know, driving a car is just like walking around or something, see. But I still dig driving. I love to drive. Well, driving that truck was such an exquisite thrill. That the whole thing, you know, has a kind of a warm, soft glow about it. Just driving that truck. And from that Saturday on, see, since Leonard got the idea, see, that, you know, I could do it and also make the delivery. See, he didn't do anything from that time on. He had the scene going. He was getting the money, and I was doing the work. But to me, that wasn't work. It was, you know, fantastic kicks driving that truck. And, you know, I'd carry the box up, and I'd put it in there, and there's always a lady in there. She says, now, wait a minute. Don't go before I check and see whether or not they sent the toilet paper. You know, they're looking through there. Yes, that's fine. Oh, okay. All right, son. Very good. Fine. Thank you. Tell Mr. Aschenschlager that I'll be in for the sliced ham next Monday, all right? I said, yes. Thank you very much. And I go running down into the truck and... Rah, rah, rah. Oh, I'd love to gun that baby. I have it neutral. As soon as I had a big cloud of blue smoke. And Leonard, now, wait a minute. Now, why did Leonard do this? Well, it's pretty obvious. It ain't every, you know, day that a 16-year-old kid gets a great, fantastic, movable, foolproof place to score. This is what this guy did, see? And as far as I was concerned, you know, I was only paying my dues, you know? So he said, after the first couple hours, he says, now look, he says, don't tell Louie. Louie was Aschenschlager's son. And he was about 58, you know, tough character, see. And Aschenschlager was about 94. And he says, you don't tell Louie, right? I says, no, of course not. Tell him what? He says, that's right. You keep it that way. Don't tell Louie. Everything's going to be fine. And so we pull in, it's 5 o'clock, and he pays, you know, he pays Leonard off. He pays me my 75 cents. And all week, I'm thinking about driving a truck. And I'd see it once in a while on the street during the week, see, when I wasn't working. You know, there'd be some other guy driving a truck. And, wow, Patsy, I said, there goes my truck. Yes, there, the old truck. She's still out there earning dough for Aschenschlager's work. Great truck. Love the truck. And then 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd be there, you know, about 11 o'clock in the morning, already hanging around, see, waiting for them to load the truck. And then they would load the truck up, see, and I'd get... In this side, I always started out right. See, I would be over on the right-hand side of the seat, and Leonard would get in the left-hand side. We'd drive off. He'd make the first two deliveries, and he'd pick this chick up, the same one. He'd pick her up every Saturday from that day on. And for 2.5-3 hours, I'd wheel that truck around laughing and yelling. And he wouldn't be... I have to explain something to you. This truck was a pretty big truck, you know, one of these big panel babies. And it held a lot of groceries and had a lot of space in it. And I guess the reason he made the first two or three deliveries so he could clear a space for his action. You know, it is. And I wouldn't see him from that minute on because, the last deliveries, by the way, were the stuff that was piled up right by the driver's seat. I'll explain that to you. That the last deliveries of the day were always the ones that were deepest into the truck. The first deliveries, of course, were back by the door. These two doors just weren't open, see? So we would be working gradually backwards. Well, all the while, I couldn't see back there. This stuff is piled all up, you know, they got these bags of stuff in there. I never saw Leonard. All I knew is that every time we'd stop someplace, I'd go back and open the door, and he'd sort of brush himself off, and this chick, you know, would sort of straighten herself up, and he'd say, well, who are we at now?
I'd say, Mrs. Howard. He saw it. Here it is right here. It's this big bag here. Take it there. They'd push it out. And then he'd close the door. And then, it's just the way life went. And ever since that time, I must say, trucks turned me on in a curious way, you know? And while we're on the subject of things that turn you on, I would like to lay some Wolf's Kasha on you, friend. Wolf's Kasha. Tomorrow morning, you sit down to a nice hot dish of Wolf's Kasha. Boy, that'll throw you into a tizzy. Isn't that a great phrase? You know where I heard that word? Throw you into a tizzy. I heard somebody use that the other day, you ever hear that phrase? Well, you know, that has to go back to roughly the pre-revolutionary days, about
Terrible.
The meet, here at WOR New York, 10018. And incidentally, you must be over 21, because some of these awful heady recipes. Nevertheless, trucks, and I read this story of this kid with a bus, you know, and I said, by God, that kid touched a very secret spot way down deep. And you know, that's the thing. People who are watching All in the Family today, these days. I mean, it's a fun show. You've seen it, Joy. It's funny in its own way, you know. But I don't think it comes 3 light years near to the very early black and white Jackie Gleason Honeymooners. Do you remember when he was a bus driver? That's right. Now that, and the apartment he lived in. You recall the apartment on a honeymoon? That was right, man. Oh, listen, that looked like, that looked like, and his friend, what was his friend's name? Huh? Well, yeah, but that was the actor. What was his character's, what was the name of the character? That's right. Exactly. Now, what was Jackie Gleason's name? That's right. Ralph Crampton and Norton was his buddy. Now, what was the name of his wife? Not the actress, but the name of his wife. That's correct. Alice. And what was Norton's wife's name? Come on. Boy, was she something, too. She was great, the original one. Fantastic. You don't remember? Well, if you ever get a chance, for those of you who have seen, this is just a value judgment, and I'm going to do one. If you ever get a chance to see any reruns of the old black and white honeymoon, as they called it, don't hesitate. I mean, because you'll find that you'll be laughing out loud just watching these things, and they must have been filmed 150 years ago. As a matter of fact, Jackie Gleason looks absolutely svelte, but they are great. And as a matter of fact, what made me think of this, I saw one here a couple of weeks ago on one of the channels. I don't know what channel it was. Unfortunately, I would give them a plug if I did, but I would just, there it was, see? And I looked at this thing, and I realized how incisive this was about, you know, the ordinary walking around life, like there was this one sequence, and I thought this was so great. Because, you know, the one thing that I think they miss with Archie Bunker is they never discuss his work much or anything. Whereas, actually, in the true Archie Bunker world, work is discussed a great deal. That's right. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of yelling about work. And so here was this one great sequence, and it showed the door opens. You see this crummy pad, you know, and the door opens. Slam, it opens, bam, the door opens real mad. See? And he comes walking across the stage. Absolutely, you know, walking real, yeah, that's right, absolutely. No smile, nothing on his face. He walks across the stage, and right across the apartment, you see this the windows open, you see the fire escape out there, the whole bit. See? He walks across the apartment, and he opens the ice box. This rotten-looking ice box. He opens it up. And he reaches in. You hear, yeah, he's a lot of rattling. He's reaching in, and he finally he grabs a bottle of beer. So he comes out, he slams the door, sits down,
And he just goes, bam, you know, with a beer. He just slams it down. And with that, he's looking around for an opener. So he's looking in the drawer. Finally gets the opener. He opens the bottle of beer, and he's drinking a beer. Looking mad. Oh, boy. He's just sitting there drinking beer. Well, at that point, you hear Alice's voice. Says, she says, Ralph, is that you? Nothing. He just sits there. He's so, you know. She says, Ralph, is that you? He takes another big slug of beer. She says, Ralph, is that you out there in the kitchen? Puts the beer down. He says, now who were you expecting? Who do you think it is? Yes, it's me. What do you want? And she comes to the door, and she's wiping her hands. She was always wiping her hands with a cloth. Obviously, she'd been cleaning, so you're wiping her hands. She says, well, what's eating you? Nothing. And there's a pregnant pause. She says, well, if I wait long enough, you'll tell me. And he says, what do you mean by that? Are you trying to say that I come around here complain all the time? No, I'm not saying that, Ralph. Not at all. You never complain, Ralph. You never complain around here. In fact, you're always a ray of sunshine here. In fact, I can hardly wait sometimes for you to get home. All right. That's the way it's going to be. How about it if I go out and have dinner myself somewhere else and not even show up here till tonight when I feel like coming in? And she walks out. And that bugged her. She didn't say anything. She just walks out into the next room. See? She just leaves. He figured she was going to say, stop, I love you, please. He's drinking a beer. He says, I'm not kidding, I'm going to go out. I'm not kidding, I'm going to go down to Al's Diner and have dinner in hell with this place. Long pregnant pause. And finally she comes to the door again. He's drinking a beer. Now, this is a great sequence. You'll never see anything like this on Archie Bunker. And this is, by the way, a very realistic battle. She comes to the door and she says, look, she says, if you're going to go down to the diner and have supper, do it without yelling. You're going to wake up everybody for four floors around. I don't care whether you go to the diner or not, but stop yelling. And she disappears again. Now he's really bugged. She has literally told him, go ahead, the hell with you, go out to Al's Diner and have supper. I don't care. He's got the bottle of beer and he drains it. You know how Gleason, I mean, he's like Falstaff, see? He slurps it down, puts the bottle down, jumps up, runs over to the ice box. He rustles in there, and then he turns around. He says, you forgot to get beer! There's only one beer in here! That's no answer. And this whole scene has been going on, see, and you can just see something's really bugging him. Something's really bugging him, and she has not even asked him. Funny, he sits down now, and he's got this bottle of something. See, he's drinking this bottle, and it's an old flat bottle of, and this was so true, he's got a bottle of opened orange soda that somebody left in the icebox like 6 months ago, and now it's flat. He's drinking flat orange soda. He's just drinking it. Ah, he makes a face, puts it down. And finally he says, all right, if you want to know what's bugging me, I'll tell you what's bugging me. I'll tell you what's bugging me. He says, Ralph, look, Ralph, I don't care what's bugging you. All I know is that I want a little peace and quiet around here. Now, why don't you go down to the diner and tell everybody at the diner what's bugging you? But just give me a little peace and quiet. I've had a hard day, and I don't care what's bugging you. I'll go down to the diner and tell everybody down there what's bugging you. I'm sure they want to know. They will be delighted to know. Pregnant
sound of silence. With that, he gets up and walks across the floor, and you think he's going to go out. You think he's going to leave, see? He walks up to the door, opens it up, bam! Then he slams it. He figured she's going to come running out, see? He's gone, he's gone. Nothing, she doesn't come out of the bathroom or wherever the hell she is. Okay. He takes the door open, he hollers up the stairs, "Hey, Norton! Hey, Norton! Hey, Norton, you up there?" Dead silence. No answer comes down. "Hey, Norton! Come on down, Norton, you up there? How about let's go on out to the diner?" No answer. There's nobody there. Norton is gone. Norton's wife is gone. Alice doesn't give a damn what's bugging him. And he's sitting there at the table now, and I'm wondering, what's bugging him? What's bugging this guy? He's really looking mad. And it's serious. He's got this flat bottle of orange drink, and he's drinking it. He looks like Hamlet. And finally, Alice comes out from the back, and she's washing her hands with a rag, you know. She's got her apron on. Joey's had her hair up in curlers, you ought to see. She said, "Look, Ralph, if you're going to stay here, at least tell me what the problem is. If you're not, go. I just don't want to hear any more yelling." "All right. All right. I'll tell you what the trouble is, Alice. You know what the trouble is? How many times have I told you about Sweeney?" "What about Sweeney? Doesn't he work at the bus company?" "He does. What did I tell you? 2 months ago, I came right in his kitchen. And I told you, did I tell you what Sweeney promised to me? Do you remember what Sweeney promised?" "No, I don't remember." "That made him mad. You don't remember. Well, I'll tell you what it was. 2 months ago, Sweeney told me that when they get the new buses in, I would get the first new bus. When the buses came in this afternoon, I'm not even on the list. I've been driving the same bus for 17 years. It's got a bad transmission. The handle on the door is coming off. Who do you think got the new bus?" "Well, I'll tell you who got the new bus. Clifford. That damn Clifford. He ain't been there. He's been there 5 years less than I've been there. Walking around, taking him out bowling. He got the bus. We're not going to get another bus for 2 years." And she comes out of the back, out of the john. She says, "Well, you mean you didn't get the bus?" "I didn't get the bus. Driving the same bus." She says, "I'm really sorry, Ralph." And he kind of softens. "Yeah, well, I still got you, Alice." "That's right, Ralph. So let's go down to the diner and have dinner together. I'll take you out tonight. What the hell? You only live once. Let's go out tonight. You just live once. You just live once. Let's go out and play it up big tonight, Alice." At which point, you hear from upstairs, you hear this voice hollering, "Hey, Ralph! Hey, Ralph! Hey, Ralph, it's Norton!" And he sticks his head out the door and he says, "Hey, Norton, come on! Me and Alice is going down to the diner tonight! What the hell, you only live once! We're going to eat out tonight! We're going to meet them over the diner! And we're going to, you know, bring their own beer! We're going to go out and have a good time!" And then Norton comes downstairs with his funny hat on. You know Norton? And Norton walks in. He says, "How are you, Ralph?" "How are you, Ralph? Hey, you're sounding in a good mood tonight, Ralph." And then his face changes. "I'm in a terrible mood. Just don't come on and tell me I'm in a good mood, Norton." "Norton, it happened again. I'm going to leave that bus company. I'm going to quit that bus company, Norton. You know what they did to me, Norton? They gave the new bus. 17 years I've been driving the same bus, and Clifford promised me I would get a new bus. When the first ones come in, I'd get it, right? They gave it to that damn Clifford. I'm going to leave that bus company." And Norton says, "Listen," he says, "you think you got troubles." He says, "I want to tell you." He says, "For 30 years now, I've been working in the 6th Avenue sewers. They've been promising me that one day they would give me Park Avenue. Well, they reassigned everybody last month, and they put me on 3rd Avenue. And who got Park Avenue? I'll tell you who. McGonagall's gang. Guy ain't been here 5 years less than I've been here, and he got Park Avenue already." And with that, the four of them went out to the diner to have dinner. And I said to myself, "My God, is that true?" And that's where Archie Bunker fails. It's a very funny show, but Archie never talks about his work at home. And the true Archie Bunker brings it home, man. I want to tell you, he brings it home in bushel baskets. He brings it home in gunny sacks. I can remember my old man. Now, I'm going to tell you a true story. Great trauma in our family. My old man, he worked for this office like as long as I could remember. And one night he comes home, slams the door open, walks in right to the kitchen, into the john, slams the door. And I knew it was trouble. As usual, he came in, through the table, paper on the table. "How are you, kids?" "Nothing." He boom, right through. My mother says, "Shh, now don't bother your father. He's had a bad day at the office." And we didn't know how bad it was. He comes out of the john, sits down, opens his paper, says nothing. He's reading the paper. My mother's over at the sink there, hanging over the sink, with the Brillo pads. She serves the mashed potatoes. The old man say nothing. Finally, he lays the paper down. You know that feeling of he's going to make an announcement? Lays the paper down. "Well, you might as well get ready." She says, "What happened?" "Gallagher got it." She says, "He did? He did. Gallagher got it. That's phony.
A little kid, I'm about 7. See, I don't know what it's about. You know, Gallagher got what? You know, who's Gallagher? Gallagher got it."
So Gallagher got it. He got it. My mother says, "Oh, I'm sorry." He says, "Gallagher got it. That's all you can say about it. And never want to hear any more about it." And he says, "And another thing. That's the last company picnic we're ever going to. I'm not going to the company picnic, and I'm not going to the Christmas party. And another thing, if they think I'm going to paint the signs for the Christmas party, they're out of their mind. Gallagher got it." That was never mentioned again. Years go by, and one night, My old man is dead and gone years. I'm out of the army. I'm talking to my mother on the phone, and it just hit me, that strange scene, Gallagher got it. And I brought it up, and I said, "Hey, Ma, when I was a kid, was there anybody involved in a family named Gallagher?" She said, "Gallagher, do you remember that?" I said, "What was it that he got? Remember the old man? You remember the old man saying Gallagher got it? What was it he got?" She said, "Oh, that was terrible." I said, "Well, what did he get?" She said, "Well,
remember your father worked in the accounting department at the office there?
Yes, he did. I remember that.
Well, for 6 years, he thought he was going to be named chief clerk. And Gallagher got it. She didn't have to say anymore. I said, oh. At that point, I knew something about my old man I never knew. I could see why he enjoyed bowling, even more than anything. After that, he took up driving around on Sunday, yelling out of the car at guys. I guess in every guy's life, somewhere back deep, buried amid all those rusted nails and broken bottles of memories, there is a Gallagher who got it.